My name is Matt Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Clancy for the honor to participate at an AA meeting, at this AA meeting in my home group. I have a lot of respect for Clancy and his commitment to AA, and I give Clancy a lot of power in my life too. He's probably one of the only persons that I give that the power of approval and to when I run around after him and try to get his approval. And I'd like to say after 15 years I still haven't gotten it, so I know I'm doing okay. Oh, okay, got somebody else. I think the only other person that I give that much power to is my wife, and it's like, yes, dear, I'm into romance. So she's got something I want, you know, and I'm willing to go to any lengths. But I come from a normal family. Both my parents are alcoholics, and I was an asthmatic from birth, a very sickly child. I never got out of bed till about the fifth grade. I just had asthma attack after asthma attack, and was given shots of adrenaline and put on this stuff called, as soon as I could swallow a pill, they put me on this stuff called Tedrol, which is sort of an amphetamine, and it affects me it would affect me kind of like how I feel right now, where my palms would be sweaty and my heart would be pounding, but I'd be stuck in one place and for 45 minutes. And I would just sit there, and usually I was just stuck to a Naugahyde chair watching cartoons and cowboy movies and stuff. And I never really left the area. I just did that. I didn't go to school, like I said, until about the fifth grade. And I finally went, and I became obsessed with recess. And that's the only reason I went back to school. I loved sports. I loved to play. It was like, that's why I think the yard is such a natural for me. I've always liked things like kill the man with the ball, or jungle ball, you know, jungle volleyball like we play and stuff. I love that stuff. I would get up early and go to school early, and I would stay after school and play. But in between that, I never did anything. I would just sit there, and I was the smart ass of every class I was in, and after a while, I was like, to be disruptive, and I always lived up to it the whole time. But about the seventh grade, with the help of a friend, I wrote a pornographic essay and got expelled from school, and that sort of started everything. At that time, I was living with my mom, and my folks were divorced at the time, and I ran away from home, and I got caught right away, and I was taken to a psychologist, who was a group therapist and a dream analyzer, I liked that so much I would make up dreams for her to analyze, and yeah, I just like hearing about me, and I would just sit there and listen for my time, and then and go off into fantasy, and that's all I did. And as soon as I got out of there, I don't remember my first drink. There was always alcohol in my house. My mother said at 2 years old, I grabbed a can of beer and drank it down and fell, passed out on in my high chair. But I don't remember that one. My first blackout too, I guess. My dad would buy those little 7 ounce cans of Coors and stuff, and I drank those, and I knew what martinis tasted like and old fashions, and I can't remember now. I think they were called vodka gimlets and stuff, and there was always that stuff around, and I always drank it, and I don't remember really getting drunk. I remember faking some drunks, and I think I didn't start really getting drunk till I was about 15, and I was a periodic until I turned about 16, and then became a daily user. At 16, I got a job on the Redondo Pier as a dishwasher, and it was right around Christmas time. There was the Christmas party, and I got there early. Christmas party started at 9, and by 8:30 I had passed out sitting on the only toilet in the place. And it was one of those deals where my body was drunk, but my mind wouldn't turn off. And I remember sitting there in that can and with my face against the wall, and I could hear them pounding on the door. You know, why don't you get out of there? It's not that I didn't want to, but there was nothing I could do. And finally, somebody picked the lock and came in and pulled up my pants and took me home to my mother. And my mother, I remember, called my father and said, "Come and pick up your son. He's just like you." And my father at that time lived in Hermosa Beach, and at that time I hated my father. My folks had got divorced, and the last time they did, I asked my mother if there was any legal actions I could take against him. I moved in with him down in Hermosa Beach, and I learned about life down there. It was the greatest. I learned all the important things, like how to stake out the liquor store to get Ripple Red. I was at 16. I couldn't walk in and buy, but I learned to pay people to buy booze for me, and I like Ripple Red and Ripple White and Spinata and stuff. I liked Spinata, and I also liked pot. And my idea of a great high was being so loaded on pot that I could actually taste the fruit in Spinata wine. You know, but you know, where your mouth is just so dry, and you take that drink of Spinata and. Or anything, and it just tastes so good. And swear to God, there's oranges in there or something. You know, I learned at that time what everything would do for me. I knew that alcohol would give me courage. I would drink. I had loved to drink wine and go to parties so that I didn't back down. I've always been afraid all my life. I've always been fearful and stuff, and I would drink wine and go to parties, and then I wouldn't back down, or I'd be able to stare across the room at the guys, and if they, you know, and not look away real fast and stuff, and then I knew pot enhanced things. I always wanted things enhanced. Everything looked gray to me, and I would smoke smoke my pot, and there's nothing like Jimi Hendrix. After a couple of bowls, and when you can really understand, excuse me while I kiss the sky. a little wine, a little amphetamines for motivation. Unlike Ida, I didn't start having children until after I was sober. Found the benefit of that, but I just used that. I knew everything. Everything revolved around my alcohol and drugs, and I did that. I don't like to talk about it, but I did a little dealing too and stuff. But this is an AA meeting. I just drank most of the always, and I smoked a lot of pot, and I did nothing. I learned how to surf down there, and I enjoyed that. Except for when you drink a half a gallon of Spinata the night before, you're not up with the dolphins in the morning, I'll tell you that. You know, it's like victory at sea by the time I got out there, usually. But I would go out in the water, and I had a good time. I loved Hermosa Beach, but around that time, my mother moved back in with us, and my father was a fifth a day vodka drinker who would get drunk and turn into a big goober, you know, chased me around and just wanted to hug me and tell me how much he loved me, I go, get away. And my mother was a two drink blackout drinker, and when I mean two drinks, she would not out of the bottle like I used to do. She would make a scotch on the rocks with a little soda, and then she would drink two of those, and she'd black out and destroy the house and stuff, and then go to bed at 7 o'clock. And she would do those kind of things, and it would be crazy around the house. You'd come to my house, and the first thing you do is you come in the door and you would test the atmosphere. You could cut it with a knife; it'd be that thick generally. And it would just depend on if my mother was like ripping the Sony TV out of the wall, and would have it in the sink. kind of thing, and it would be 3 p.m, and she'd be, it would be in the sink, and she'd be like this with a hammer, and it would be 3 p.m, and I'd look at my father, and he was still in his pajamas, and all he'd go, "Ah, oh, don't do that, honey," she just exploded right there in the sink, and that or all the records. My dad liked to listen to the same song over and over and over again, and he'd make big mistakes. I always thought he'd go, "What did you think of that song, honey?" And she'd go, "I'll show you what I think of it," and she'd take it off the record player and just break it right in his face. And the problem with that was she didn't know the difference between Earl Garner and Jethro Tull, and so all my records would go with all of his, and you know, it would be one of those. I'd come home tuned in and ready, and I would go to the records, and I'd look, and there would be just my album cover, and I think, "Oh, I must have left it on the record player," and then I'd look and it wasn't there, and I would just look on the floor, and there'd be a trail of licorice pizza out the back there, and everything got thrown out in the backyard, and she would do that, and all except for the Christmas records. Those we had to listen to from October through February, you know. So that was normal living, basically. But these kind of things would happen, and I would go crazy. I'd go on adrenaline, and I would run around there, and I think, "What's going on here?" And at first, we'd get in these arguments and a lot of profanity and stuff, and I would run out of the house and you know, puffing. And I thought, "What's going on?" And I'd disable my father's car, and I'd get in my mother's car, and I would drive around and just get drunk. And I would get so drunk that I could just sleep in the car. Like I said, my mother would go to bed at 7, and she would wake up like 5 in the morning. And she'd get ready for work, and she'd go to work really early. And I would park the car in the alley, and she would just open the door, and I would come awake like that. And then I'd come in the house and get a couple of more hours of sleep before my dad would take me to school. And this is how I kind of went through my senior year of high school. I managed to graduate from high school without learning how to read or write, which is quite an accomplishment. Totally unprepared for life. You know, it's like, "Here's your diploma," and they just pushed me out there. And I, you know, about all I could do was roll a perfect joint when I graduated high school. Was about it. You know, I mean, I couldn't do anything else. And so I went out there. I got in the oil business for a while, pumping gas at a gas station, and the movies for a while. I worked at a theater tearing tickets and things, but I didn't do anything but that. And I would just do those jobs, and I would just get loaded day after day. This one night I came home, and there was a pile of clothes on the floor, and I looked a little closer, and all the shirts had all the sleeves cut off them, and the pants had all the pant legs cut off. And my mother had tried a suicide attempt and a blackout, and turned on the gas and woke up the next morning and wanted to know what the pant legs were doing around the windows, you know, kind of thing. And my old man took her to that psychologist I'd seen 8 years earlier, and he wanted to get an abuse, and they went to this doctor who recommended AA. And it clicked for them. They started going to meetings, and they started going and hearing Clancy speak, and would travel all around and hear him speak. And my dad got him for a sponsor, and it was kind of funny. He would always want me to come to meetings and stuff. I never wanted to really go, but I dealt drugs out of the garage, and he busted me one time, and it was kind of funny. You know, he never played catch with me when I was in Little League. But at 48 years old, he's going through the garage looking for his mitt so he can go play ball with Clancy, and he found a half a pound of pot that I had in there and freaked out, you know, and called Clancy and said, "What do I do?" And Clancy said, "Just get rid of the little son of a bitch." And I think that, you know... And so he said, what will it take? And I said, a trip to Hawaii is what it was. And I went to Hawaii, and I went over there for 3 months and tried to kill myself. I didn't eat, and I just drank, and just drank beer and smoked pot. And by the end of the 3 months, I wasn't even surfing anymore. I just was just, you know, getting up and getting loaded and crashing out. And I lost a lot of weight, and my teeth were getting wobbly. And I called up my dad. It was right before Thanksgiving, 18 years ago now. And I said, you got to get me out of here. And he brought me home. And I got back, and I went to work for Sears. And I worked there, and I liked Sears. It was a great job. I got a job in the tire department for $3.50 an hour and all the glue you can sniff. And I loved installing tires, and I would take anything I could get for motivation. Those motivators I'd take and go to work, and I would take hits of LSD just to get, you know, just for the speed. And I'd go there and just hallucinate on lug nuts all night and stuff. And then I had been taking amphetamines for such a long time, I could eat on them and stuff, and I knew when it was time to go to bed, I would just, I'd go and get about 3 quarts of beer and a couple of Jack-in-the-Box tacos, and I'd go and eat those and drink my beer, and I'd go home and hopefully fall asleep before the birds started to chirp. And that's what I did. I just, Sears kind of became my life there for 3 years, from the time I was 18. And I would go there, and I got promoted up and down there, and I would go out every night after work and just get drunk, and I had an agreement with the muffler man there. He couldn't roll a joint, and I couldn't buy liquor, so I would roll his joints, and he would buy my liquor, and I would drink Southern Comfort and stuff every night, and I'd go home after work or after that, I'd go home and clean up, and then I'd go to places like the Ore House and those bitchin' bars, and you know, where it's like 50 cents a pitcher, and the glass is optional, and I would just drink a pitcher of beer and look at girls I wanted to talk to, and I never really went out on dates because I couldn't afford it, and if I was lucky, I got picked up on, and because I just and I wasn't really that lucky to. I've never been lucky, and I just drank pitchers of beer, and I would have blackouts, those kind of blackouts where I go, all right, I'd be at the bar, I go, see you later, Tom, and I go, God, how'd I get home? And I drove with one eye, and I did all that stuff, and around this time, you guys probably all remember the drought of '72. When you couldn't get any decent pot, I kind of put down on the pot. Pardon me. So I just put down the pot and amphetamines. You know, it's like somebody would do this. Somebody would make a really loud noise, and I would just bristle. So I just put down on the amphetamines, and I just was drinking exclusively, and that's all I was doing, and so my dad started taking me to meetings with him, and I went this one to a Tuesday night Ohio Street one night with him, and I met a man named Art Cole there who changed my life. He told me, if I change my actions, my attitude will change, and I thought what a concept. Because I've always been potentialized and lectured about you got a bad attitude, or you know, your actions stink, you better change, and I always wanted to change. It wasn't that I always liked being a slug. I just never knew how to not be one, is really what it was. And Art would give me actions to take. I would call up and he'd say, go do this today, and I would go do that, I would feel great afterwards, and I was still drinking. I had gone to Alateen and Young Al-Anon and stuff, and I thought, well, I'll just kind of be one of those guys who's in Al-Anon but has an AA sponsor. And it was funny, I never got the spark in Alateen or Al-Anon, but like the identification that I got here, and so Art just kept giving me directions, and I had a date one night, and I just stopped to have one and at this bar before I got there, and I ended up drinking until I passed out in my car, and I woke up at about 10 o'clock at night, and I thought, oh, what did I do? And I looked at my watch, and I couldn't believe it, and I called up Art, and I said, I don't know what's wrong. I just, got drunk, and he said, come on over, and I came over. He goes, it sounds like you have a problem with living, Matt. He said, what I suggest you do is try going to 30 AA meetings, and if you do decide to go, be considered the alcoholics and not drink or take any drugs. And you think you can do that? And I said, yeah, I think I can do it one day at a time. And he said, great. He says, then what I want you to do is to go to the meetings and go up to three new people you don't know and stick out your hand and say, hi, my name is Matt. What is your name? And then make small talk. And I said, that's great, Art, but by that time I'd reduce my small talk down to, have you scored anything lately? And, and bud, give me a bud. And that was about it. And he says, I'll tell you what, I'll teach you the key to conversation. He says, you go up to an old timer and you ask them a question about themselves. If they're any good, they'll give you 15 minutes. And it's really the truth. I went up to Vince and I said, hi, Vince, how you doing? He goes, oh, God, well, the Christmas show was... great, Vince. Okay, see you later. And, you got to stay sober long enough to learn how to get away from him. That's the deal. I stayed sober for 45 days, and I did great. I shook hands, and I got to know people, and I made conversation, and I had a great time, and I honeymooned big time. And I thought, this AA is great. It's just conversation and coming around and stuff. And I did that, and I thought, this is what I missed in the second and third grade. And I didn't learn. And so I went out and applied. I had a premeditated slip. And I went out and slipped, and a friend of mine was a lifeguard in Arizona. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. And I flew to his place, and he picked me up, and he handed me a lid, and he had a six-pack of beer, and I just started rolling joints and drinking beers on Friday morning. And by Sunday, I was in one of those things where I was sitting in at a party in a chair by myself. My body was drunk, but my mind wouldn't turn off. I couldn't think of a thing to say to anybody. I couldn't think of anything that Art had told me to do and stuff. And I thought, this isn't the answer either. And that was May 27th, 1973, and I haven't had anything since. If I make it I make it four more days, I'll have 15 years and 6 months. And I'll tell you, I came back here and I felt sentenced to AA. What was funny is 15 years ago, the Pacific Group was the place that, they would speed by and throw somebody out. When they couldn't make it anywhere else, and I used to laugh at that. I used to think, oh, this is the place for losers. And it never dawned on me that I fit right in like a... I always set myself, oh, I'm not like these people, I'm just here. And I'll tell you, I didn't like it. I felt sentenced to AA, and I didn't like it here, and I would sit in the back with Harry, Jess, and we would just sit back there, and people would come up and go, God, you're so lucky to be here so young. You have the rest of your life ahead of you. And I'd say, God, great. Me and Harry, only 40 or 50 more years of this shit, Harry, thank you, Harry. And I hated it, and here's the bitch about it, right? And it seemed like everybody that got up here to speak was bald and wore glasses. But what the heck, huh? Not so bad, huh? Bald. So get used to it. You learn to try to do things with it, like just to try and get in the tan is fun, I guess, huh? So, but I just came around. I did nothing for. I was like a loser. I did nothing for a year. I had two pairs of pants. I'm one of those guys that had to hit another bottom once I got here. I got here and I had double knits and high heels shoes and that kind of stuff. And I went. when those wore out, I was reduced to Levi's and flannel shirts, and which are in again now. But I, at that time, they weren't so in, and I had one pair with holes and one pair without, and then I alternated them, kind of thing. And I lived like that. I lived in a one room place for 2 years, just temporarily. You know, I never put anything on the walls. I thought, well, I'll be moving soon, and I never did. And I around this time, I got Clancy for a sponsor, and he took me under his wing and took care of me, and we dominated the yard, and you know, kind of just the class of '73 just kind of took over the yard. Kind of, we still do, but. I had a great time. I stayed sober my first couple of years on just the thought of the yard. I thought, I can't go out because I didn't want to lose my place on the volleyball court. And it's like there was all these old farts in the class of '73, and I had more time than them. And I would make the, I'd say, you get in the back row, and stuff. And I love that. I just stayed. I say a couple of them up front here, and you know, punished them, but they got the. We won, you know. So that's what counted there. But I had a great time, and I still do. But I learned how to work in AA. I had to get a job, and Art told me originally. He said if you learn to get up to an alarm, just like learning to feed the fish, and I started. I taught myself to wake up to an alarm clock. And I finally got a job. My friend Claude got me a job, an interview, and I didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go. It was in the valley, and Claude told Clancy that I didn't go out and apply, and Clancy said, "You will apply," and I ran out there and applied for the job. Finally, I didn't want it, and I've been there for 12 and a half years now. You know, it's like I was able to Eskimo my boss into the program, and you know, it's one of those deals. I've got a terrific job, and you know, I was talking to a couple of my friends last night, driving home from a panel. I've been there for 12 and a half years, and my boss likes me, and I go to conventions and stuff, and he introduces me and to big suppliers, and he doesn't introduce other people and stuff, and I think. But I'm still one of those guys who, when I get a message and I'm supposed to call him, I keep thinking, he's found me out. You know, I mean, I'm fired, and I produce as much as anybody else there and stuff, but I still have that running. But I had to work the steps when I got here, and I didn't do it very well my first time. I don't think I hazed through everything. I did my first three, and then I did my fourth and fifth with Art, and I cried. You know, I thought this is how unmasculine this fifth step was, and I came here to be a man. I thought, and I was bawling and stuff. And he said, "You'll be okay." And I skipped right over my sixth and seventh, like any good 21-year-old. You know, what character defects? And, you know, or what's a shortcoming kind of thing, and I just moved right on and did my my eighth and my ninth, and I made amends to Sears, and they fired me, and but they didn't prosecute me, which was you know, you got which was the benefit there, and I set up a payback plan with them, and I did that for about 4 months, and then I stopped paying them back. I thought they don't need the money, and then I did that for about 2 years, until I realized that until I heard Clint talk about ducking in the back of the elevator, and I thought I have the money to pay him off, and I don't know why it was Sears here in Santa Monica, and that's right where all the second in Arizona was our Saturday night, and fourth in Wilshire was our Thursday night and stuff, and I would drive, and I would always get caught at the light right at Sears. I never made it through. It's like I had to watch. My ex-employee friend, you know, or the employees walk back and forth there between those two buildings, you know, and think, why, you know, what am I doing? And I finally paid him, and they didn't even send me a thank you note after I paid him. But I, you know, it was like luggage that I got to cut away, and I don't know why I carry that stuff, or you know, why I did that to myself. So I did that, and about 9 years ago, I got involved with a gal, and 7 years ago, I married her, and that's when the six and the seventh step came in to my life. I thought when I got married that it was my job to let her know what her character defects were, and that's just part of the relationship, I thought, and I learned after that I called my sponsor. I would whine, you know, to my sponsor, you know what she did this time, and he would say, as long as you pick on her character defects, they'll never get better. And they say, have patience, tolerance, and understanding. And you know how hard that is in a relationship. It was a hard thing to do, but I learned how to do it. We've been married for 7.5 years, and thanks to the program, we have a pretty good relationship today. We communicate part of the time, which I think maybe after your eighth year of marriage, you learn to talk about other things, but it's kind of funny. I remember when I was first sober, sitting there, when I was living in my one-room place, I was sitting on the edge of the bed looking into my shoes and thinking if I only had a wife and a family and a house and, you know, a nice car and stuff and a good job, you know, everything would be okay. Tonight, as I was putting on my shoes and like the kids were screaming and my wife was complaining, I was thinking, if I only had a one-room place somewhere I could go to get away from this responsibility. You know, it's like you forget that there's the strings attached to responsibility. I don't know why, but I've learned to deal with the responsibility, and I have a great thing. It's great. My wife and I have had two beautiful kids, and I just love my kids. I'm to the point where I've turned into a big goober with them. I chase my son around and just hug him and tell him how much I love him and stuff. And it's to the point where he's going, no, Daddy, no, no. No more smooches, you know, that kind of stuff. And my little daughter's great. If you ever see the movie Greystoke, where he grunts the first half of the movie, and that's all she does right now. It's like she just grunts and looks at you. And it's like baby speak or something. You're supposed to like understand what she wants at the time, but she grunts around, and it's the greatest. I go, my shoe? No. Or the TV changer? And she just grunts, and I chase her around and just hug her too, and she can't get away so easy yet. So, but I'm lucky. I heard a great thing in the Marina Center that I just loved, and I'll steal it and use it here. And that's all my life. I've been obsessed with everything from sports to my right hand for a while, and alcohol and pot and 8 years ago I quit smoking and found Haagen-Dazs ice cream and stuff but the only thing I've ever learned to do to moderation is work the steps, it seems like. and that's something that I've done. I'll tell you what I do today for that is every once a month I get my babies together and we sit down and we go over the steps and I don't know if they get anything out of it, but I feel great afterwards. And, you know, it used to scare me at first the thought of doing that, because I always thought, well, you have to be a Clancy or a Johnny or somebody to do that. And I realized that just getting a couple of three guys together, God's there. And I feel lucky today. I'm very, very honored to be here in front of my home group and to speak and to have Clancy ask me. It's a great honor, and I'm glad you're all here, and I'd like to thank you all for listening.